Welcome back to episode 142 of the Guardian Project podcast. I'm your host, Andy, and this intro is a hollow one.
Oh, well, maybe you can discard a bunch of cards and that was it a free intro at least? Yeah. Like you discarded three cards beforehand?
Sure.
And I'm your host, Mike, and I've always been pretty disappointed that Wizards of the Coast didn't finish the chess cycle from the Rise of the Eldrazi, because we got Pawn of Ulamog, but where's Knight of Ulamog or Bishop of Ulamog? I mean, come on, we need it.
They were sacrificed, right? Those ones aren't important pieces. Isn't that how that goes?
Oh, no, the pawn's the one that's not important.
But the bishop's important. I don't know how to play chess, but I did watch that Netflix show where they played chess on the ceiling at night.
I thought you were about to say that you stayed at a Holiday Inn Express last night.
No, I did not.
Please listen carefully.
And this is the podcast where we talk about all things Magic the Gathering.
But mostly Commander. But also, this episode, we're actually going to talk about the all things Magic the Gathering part.
And not mostly Commander.
That's right, because this week we have a few guests from Lucky Paper Radio that are going to join us, and we're going to talk about Cube.
Yes, before we do that, if you want to support us, you can head to patreon.com and support for any dollar amount. Patreon.com/Guardian Project Pod. We really appreciate everybody who supports us. You keep our show going.
And if you're looking for another way to support the podcast, whatever platform you are enjoying the podcast on now, if you could subscribe, rate, review, and leave comments, we would be very appreciative.
And if this is your first time here, you can find us online at theguardianprojectpodcast.com. We stream on Twitch at twitch.tv/guardianprojectpodcast. We're online at Twitter at Guardian Pod. We're on Instagram at Guardian Project Podcast. And you can find our gameplay videos on YouTube at youtube.com/theguardianprojectpodcast. I think it's time that we're just going to get to it. So today we're joined by the hosts of Lucky Paper Radio, a show that uses magic as a framework to explore subjects like game theory, statistical analysis, epistemology, data visualization, and community, focusing on Cube and Battlebox primarily. Welcome, Andy and Anthony, to our show.
Boy, it's real interesting to hear you read that out loud. You know, I did write it, but it's never been read back to me, and just hearing it sounds very hoity-toity.
A little, but I mean, it's true. We do love epistemology.
I mean, it's like, yeah, for us, magic is just an excuse to talk about all the things we love and like hang out with our friends.
That's a good way
to
say
it. You know what? It speaks to your credibility, though. I really like it. It's very me, and I wish we had that.
I was going to ask what the definition of epistemology is, actually.
So,
personally,
epistemology is like the study of knowledge. It's like, how do we know what we know? And all of these.
Thinking about thinking
is a good way to put it. And, you know, it's the kind of stuff we talk about in Magic all the time. It's like, oh, this is a good card. How do you know it's a good card? Like, what makes this card good? What is the definition of good card? Those are the kinds of conversations we like to have a lot. And so, yeah, that's what we do.
I learned a new word today that is never going to pop up on my Wordle. So
it is more than five letters, so it's probably not going to work out for you.
More than five letters. And today we're talking about Cube, which we don't talk about a ton on our show. And we have in the past. I have a Ravnica Cube. We've talked about that. Mike is working on creating his own Commander Cube, and we've talked about that briefly. But really, we are going to hear from the experts. Lucky Paper Radio, Anthony and Andy, why don't you go ahead and give us your definition of Cube and tell us what Cube means to you?
So that's a really difficult thing to really define. I think a lot of what we talk about is just how that is not clear. But as a baseline, a Cube is typically 360-ish cards. It's usually a singleton, and it's basically just a custom draft format. You get a bunch of your favorite cards together, and you get to play it like your own custom set that you can play again and again. But beyond that, it can really be whatever you want. I mean, there's no set limit on how many cards you have. You can obviously break singleton. You can change the pack size, the draft rules. You can add custom rules to just create an entirely novel Magic experience. And that is just the most fun playground to use all these cool game pieces that I love to collect.
Yeah, it is like quite literally the only real way to play Magic in a very self-contained way, right? Like you can't in Commander just make up new rules and show up to the table and be like, oh, by the way, you know, all the costs in my deck are reduced by two.
Because I don't lose to mill.
That doesn't really work that way. But Anthony and I have both built cubes where the base starting deck size is different. Anthony has a cube where you just get a discount on all of your spells and abilities and ridiculous stuff happens. And because, you know, Cube is a space where everybody is playing the same cube. You sit down at the table with one environment that you're all navigating. You get freedom to do whatever you want, which is which for us, I mean, Anthony and I are both very design minded. We both played a bunch of Commander. That's how we fell in love with Magic. And I think for us, really, it was like deck building and fiddling with decks and brewing that was a really fun part for us. Playing is fun too, but I think, I think, you know,
I like to play Magic.
Playing Magic is good, but really is the brewing part. And so if you're really into that aspect, you know, I think Cube is a fun way to really emphasize that and let you have a free space to roam. Design your own cards. Just make up your own cards, put them in the draft. You can do that too.
So how did you go about going from your love for the format of Cube to creating Lucky Paper Radio?
Well, it's a weird... So basically, I've been active on this Discord server for a while. It's called the MTG Cube Talk Discord. It's a good place to talk about Cube if you're interested in joining. And I made some friends there, and one buddy was like writing an article about how he does data analysis within his cube. He tracks all of his drafts and has sort of developed a system for deriving meaningful information out of those drafts he's tracked. And also, importantly, a system for knowing what kind of information to ignore isn't really relevant. And he wrote this big, beautiful article that he was going to just put a PDF on Reddit. And I was like, hey, I make websites. Can I make a website for you to put your article on? And then it's like not just a PDF you stuck on the Cube subreddit. And that's how Lucky Paper started 3-4 years ago. It's been a minute now.
Whoa.
I registered the domain like 5 years ago. I have this idea brewing for a long time. Anyway, it started with this one article, which kind of ballooned into a couple more articles. And eventually I managed to twist Anthony's arm into starting a podcast because I love the sound of my own voice. I love making podcasts. and we've been doing that now for almost 2 years in July. So a year and a half at this point we've been doing the show. And it's been a lot of fun.
Very nice. How long have you been playing Magic since before you started the show? When did you both start? What set was out?
I started playing Magic around Urza's Legacy initially and played for a few years when I was a child. In my memory, I thought I was like a teenager playing Magic. And then when I got back into the game, I remember I looked back at the cards to see what are the last cards I remember to figure out when I stopped playing. And turns out I was a child, which explains why I was losing so much. So I played a bunch as a kid. I actually I'm not sure if you're familiar with like the stories of like Urza's Winter, right? Where they've had all these broken cards in the Urza's block that just kind of ruined Magic for a long time. And they talk about it in these hallowed terms. But I was like kind of a casualty of that. I remember going to like the Wizards of the Coast retail store in the Exton Mall in Pennsylvania. And just my opponents were doing things I couldn't possibly understand. They're like Talarian Academy, Memory Jar. I do a million things on turn one and you don't even get to play Magic. And I remember being a kid and being like, I guess this game's not fun.
I want to attack with my 6/1. What's wrong with you?
Right. So I originally played back then. And then Anthony and I actually worked together. We had a coworker around about 7 or 8 years ago now that basically was like, hey, actually, this woman went to one of these like code boot camp schools where you like do a 6 or 9 month intensive program to basically get to the point where you're a junior developer. And during this program, apparently one of her instructors was like, hey, if you're going to work in technology, you have to know how to play Magic the Gathering.
Wait, everybody, what? Everybody
plays Magic the Gathering in the technology world, so you have to learn. So like in their off time, like her cohort learned how to play Magic, and she like brought it up on like in her first couple months at work and was like, hey, do you guys play Magic? And both me and a couple other coworkers got this like glazed, starry look in our eyes, remembering the nostalgia of playing as kids. And so we like picked up a box of whatever the latest set was. I think it was Return to Ravnica was the newest set at that point.
Oh, good set.
Really?
Good set to come back in.
I thought it was Origins, maybe?
Origins was the first set I remember coming out when I was playing.
Okay.
But Return to Ravnica, I think, was the thing that was out when we started playing. Anyway.
I don't know if she... I might be just imagining this face, but I feel like I have a clear memory of her reaction to everyone being like, yes, we would love to play Magic, and her just being like, this is way more than I expected. I am not ready for this.
But so, you know, that began... We bought a box and, like, did a little draft at our company with, like, all of our coworkers. It was, like, a fun, you know, extracurricular thing, a fun little team-building activity. And then, I think Anthony and I fell in pretty deep and we're like, actually, maybe this is my main hobby as a grown man.
Yeah, it's weird to look back and see that that is what has happened.
But yeah, I mean, it's a great game. If you're going to commit, you know, a lot of your free time to a game, it's a pretty good one to spend your time on.
Yeah, I mean, and from there, we definitely fell in love with Commander in a big way. I think for me, a big part of it was just that, you know, we were playing Kitchen Table, really. Like, we just had some 60 card decks.
Yeah, for the first, like, year, it was just like, we were playing Modern with, like, very big air quotes. And I was like, we were playing with the Modern ban Lisp, and I was just like, I like Managorger Hydra.
But I didn't own any cards that were not
I'm going to put Managorger Hydra in a Bant deck and try and do a Managorger Hydra control. That
I thought it was
not
pretty good. And then I had a very visceral experience where we were playing with someone that actually, you know, knew how to play Magic, and they, like, totally stomped me and then looked at my deck and they were like, what's wrong? Like, this is the best card in your deck. Why do you only have one copy? And it's like, what? I don't understand. Like, because I opened a booster pack and I found this one card. That's how Magic works, right? And so from there, like, Commanders, which another one of our friends brought up, was just really appealing, like, largely for that reason, because I could just play with the cards I wanted. And if I opened up one cool card in a booster pack, I could put it in my deck and feel good about it, not have to feel like I have to go out and buy three more copies if I actually want to make a reasonable deck.
Exactly. Exactly. So did you then, Anthony, start playing during Return to Ravnica Origins, or had you played before previously as well?
So I was actually, I feel like I was the only person who was playing Magic for the first time. Like, we would go to an LGS and people, you know, you ask, when did you start playing? And everybody else would be like, well, you know, I played as a kid and I sort of got back into it. Got back into it was the phrase I heard literally every person say. But no, this was my first time getting into the game.
Nice. Well, we started right around the same time, and I do like that Cube and Commander certainly have some overlapping, brewing, I guess, possibilities, right? We see a lot of people that do streams where we brew Commander decks. I think that brewing Cube is, it feels like very overwhelming sometimes when you look at it, because not only are you just trying to curate a play experience for maybe yourself and for the people you're playing with, you're curating like an experience for eight people drafting independently from you and then potentially going to be playing against you. So
and as we've learned, if they've had a few drinks, they might say, I'm never playing this cube ever again. You have to cut this card or I'm never coming back to your house. Happened before.
You're totally right, though, that it is sort of this extension of that experience. I feel like Commander deck building is almost its own format separate from Commander playing, and it's one that I love. Like, I have built so many Commander decks in my time playing Magic.
I definitely have Commander decks in my history that I spent way more time brewing than playing. It's like I spent weeks like
Do you have any that are the opposite?
I have some that I've probably played more than I've brewed, okay. But yeah, it's like, you know, I've spent weeks working on the list, and I played it like twice, and I was like, whatever, take it apart. I did the thing, you know?
And then Cube is just this whole other dimension where it's not just, like you're saying, it's not just, do I get to play this deck and smile when it does the thing? It's, do I get to see someone else smile when they do something? And
which is a very good
feeling. It's very scary, and it often doesn't work, but when it does, it's that much more rewarding.
Exactly. So one of the nice things about Cube, now that we know what it is, from a I guess maybe a very broad definition, there's no ban list in Cube. You get to make it is what you want it. And now Commander doesn't have a significant ban list. We have a banned list. But what is your take on not having banned cards? Do you play a lot of them? Do you like to just play the most powerful cards? Give us your take on that freedom.
The best way to put it is, like, I don't ever think about it. I forget there are banned cards because I so rarely play other formats that I'm like, oh, right, some other, like, committee somewhere gets to tell me what cards I get to play with. That just feels weird. Like, I don't think in terms of, like, is a card banned or not. Like, I just think in totally different terms when I'm putting cards in a cube environment than those kinds of terms. But, I mean, to your point, that's how most Magic players approach the game, right? Cube is a relatively niche format in the grand scheme of Magic. And, frankly, most people, when they think of Cube, they just think of the Magic Online Vintage Cube, right, which has this very hallowed space in the cube world. Lots of competitive players and streamers love playing that cube and will, like, you know, make a big deal about it whenever it's on Magic Online. So, like, that is in many ways like what Cube is perceived as to people, but it's really just so much more than that. It has a way broader definition.
In fairness, though, I think that is a big factor for a lot of people, and was a big factor for you, Andy, when you got us into Cube, was you wanted to play Recurring Nightmare, and you couldn't do that in Commander, so hey, here's this other way that we can play Magic, where we can play with a lot of cards that we're interested in, and I definitely see... I see a lot of anger from a lot of Magic players. I just want to tell them, like, play Cube. You can still play with these cards. Nothing's being taken from you.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, we have a bit of an... like, our show, our whole, like, brand definitely has an agenda, which is that, like, more people should play. We absolutely like, you know, you're in this format Commander, which is like the most popular way to play Magic, and I still think there's a lot of, like, things to talk about there and unpack that are really interesting. For us, it's like I watch the Magic world, you know, writhe and get frustrated about a banned card or like a standard metagame they don't like, or, you know, a particular dominant strategy in Modern they think is not fun. And I'm just like, all y'all can just be playing Cube. You don't have to do this. Like, you can make up your own game and play by your own rules. And I mean, at least for Anthony and I, it's been like the most rewarding. If not for Cube, I don't think I would be as into Magic as I am now. Like, if Commander was the only way for me to play, I don't think I would have gotten as invested in the game as I ended up getting into it, because Cube offers this space that is just so rewarding, at least for the two of us, to play in and enjoy. And so we are just trying to like break down the barriers and make that more accessible to more players so more people can feel that joy.
Yeah, there's almost an entire world. Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
I was going to say, I almost feel like you could have the opposite experience whenever a card gets banned in another format, and you can go, how am I going to shove this in my cube just so I know that I can play it and nobody else can? But do you ever look at like how you're building your cube and consider, oh, Hall Breacher just got banned in Commander because it didn't allow people to draw cards. So is that, do you ever take that and go, okay, how can I fit Hull Breacher into this deck and not make it feel like people are not having fun with the card?
Absolutely. I mean, that's something I think about all the time, is that context really shapes what a card is. If you put a card into a different context, it's just a different card. It's going to play differently. So often you can say, well, this card was designed a certain way. It was intended to have certain play patterns, but because of interactions within, you know, Modern or Commander, it ends up just being, you know, part of a combo piece or not really working as intended. And in Cube, you have full control to put it in the context where, you know, it doesn't have those negative interactions.
I like that a lot, because you're aiming with a mindset to play a specific game. And in the actual cube format, depending on the size of the cube, it may show up, it may not show up, depending on your house rules, however you have that set up. And I like the idea of using cards in your format that aren't able to be used elsewhere, so people can continue to enjoy the cards that they have opened. Now, there are some common misconceptions about Cube, and we'd like you to talk about these a little. So the first one here is, you need a full pod to play. You do not. And this actually I know. What is the ideal pod for folks to play your cubes? And what do you see when you don't get that full pod?
Well, so I think most of the cubes Anthony and I design are like designed with the ideal of like, it'd be great if we get eight people in the same room, because eight people just works out so nicely, because you get to play three rounds of, you know, what's it called? What's that tournament structure called? It's not round robin. You get to play three rounds where you just
Swiss, whatever.
You get to play three rounds where you have a clear 3-0 and you have a couple 2-1s and 1-2s and an 0-3. Like, you
Andy
get to
loves
like
to have a clear 3-0.
You get to shake out, you know, the you get to play a competitive, you know, campaign, right? Where you get to like do the draft, play three rounds, and it's a nice little compact thing. But the beautiful thing about all these cubes is that it is so easy to treat a cube like a game system, where like that is one way to play it, but there's so many other ways to play it. And I know for me, my like love of cube and number of cube games that I play shot through the roof when I discovered years ago that there's just plenty of amazing two-player draft formats that you can play with cubes, or four-player draft formats, or six-player draft formats. Sure, three and five are kind of rough unless you're building a multiplayer specific cube and you're intending for games to be not just one-on-one. You're gonna have to hand out some buys in that way, but really any even number of people up to however big your cube can support in terms of the number of people that can play is perfectly viable. I especially love two-player draft formats because there's no waiting between rounds for someone else to finish. You just get to draft, play. As soon as your game's over, you just draft and play again. I've had many weekends where it's like, we're just going to play six cube drafts back to back. It's just me and a friend, and we're just going to sit down and just keep doing it and over again. And that, to me, just made it so more accessible to be like, I don't have to host a huge event, get exactly eight people, not nine, not seven, exactly eight people into one room at the same time for a committed period of time, for a committed like 2 or 3 hours to play a draft. It just made Cube so much more accessible to actually be able to play with just two people.
It's also, you have a tremendous amount of flexibility where, you know, we're kind of inheriting this, you know, three packs of 15 and an 8-player draft from Limited and from other ways to play Magic. And it works a lot. It works very well. And there's a lot of sort of heuristics and precedent that we can leverage. But we're not beholden to that. So if you have a smaller group of players, you can easily just do a 4-player draft and then just change the pack sizes so it works better. So very often we'll do, you know, four packs of 11. And because we're playing Cube, things aren't coming in sealed booster packs. We can do that. And it works well.
Yeah. So there's all kinds of different ways you can adjust the numbers and tweak things. And every individual cube designer is also free to do whatever they want. For example, there's a ton of cube designers, a pretty big contingent of them, that are now just playing 16-card packs because for them it's aesthetically more pleasing for everyone to get two cards out of every pack instead of 15 with eight players, which is kind of a weird way to break it down. Plus, they just get to put more cards in their cube, make all their decks a little better, make the cube more powerful, more efficient, more streamlined in whatever its goals are. And that's a pretty common pattern we're observing now.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to going up to four packs of 13, just because in a particular weird environment, I just want bigger pools for players to have access to more cards.
This is wild. This conversation's wild because typically what we've seen before is, right, you have three packs of 15 is what you normally draft.
Yeah.
But the possibilities seem to be expanding or endless because it is what you make it.
It can be whatever you make it. And, you know, like Anthony said, we're inheriting a lot of this structure from Retail Limited. But the other thing that happens is we're inheriting the structure from Magic Online, which theoretically doesn't have to run their cubes like Retail Limited, but we happen to know from talking to people that run Magic Online that just how it's built, it has to be 15 card packs, it has to be more or less singleton, it has to be within these rules because that's how the entire system was built. So even though there is a bunch of opportunity to run these different kinds of things, it just doesn't happen because the like inherited structure of Magic is not set up to handle it.
You know, right,
If you look at it as like a pre-constructed booster box, I mean, is there even possibilities to play things like sealed and
totally
other different and non-draft formats when it comes to cube?
Yeah, a lot of cubes are built with draft in mind, so they tend to be, compared to limited, extremely synergistic, like hyper-synergistic, which makes sealed a little bit difficult. But if that's the way you're interested in playing, you can absolutely design a cube with that in mind. We've actually done a couple episodes talking about this. And some things that make a lot of sense are potentially, you know, expanding the power level delta, having some more powerful cards that make sealed a little bit more fun to build the pool and sort of latch on to, and more flexible cards. So that's definitely something that you can and it is exciting to think about and design around.
We talked about this quite a bit because we kind of started our show like just a few months after the pandemic began, actually. And, you know,
coincidence.
And Ikoria was the first set where I couldn't go to my local game store's pre-release. I couldn't play my normal Magic like I like to do. You know, it was a period of my life where I was going to, you know, Wednesday night drafts every week and just drafting the new set, whatever was going on every week. And I couldn't do it anymore. Luckily, my wife does play Magic. And so I was like, please, will you get a bunch of pre-release kits with me? Can we just play a bunch of this sealed format in our house? And I actually think Ikoria was a fantastic set for sealed, largely because of companions, largely because of cycling. It just opened up a lot of different ways you could actually build a pool. And so, you know, for a period of my life, I was just playing a bunch of sealed. And so we were talking about what would it be like to design a cube environment like that. In reality, for me, given that there are so many really great draft formats for two people, I will pretty much always choose drafting, even no matter what number of people I have. But if sealed is something you're interested in, you can absolutely pursue that as a design goal for an environment.
That's great. Now, you talked about doing powerful stuff with all of your cubes. Another common misconception is that cube is always about doing powerful stuff. How are you designing your cubes specifically for you and your local play groups?
So for me, actually, the entire, well, not the entire, but the bulk of the appeal of cube design is that it doesn't have to be powerful. You know, if I was to play Constructed, you kind of need the most powerful cards to compete. You can't just say like, I love white man.
You can't
white
show up
man
to a modern
line
tournament
my...
with Mana Gorger Hydra in your deck.
Well, maybe you could. So when we started getting into cube, the really big appeal for me was you can build your own draft format, and if you like these less powerful cards, you can still play them in a context where you can be a spike and you can try and optimize the format and play well, but you can do it with these cards that don't have a home because they're just not powerful enough for Constructed or for Commander or whatever other format you might see them in.
And there definitely is a conception that cube is always about powerful cards. I think this is for a lot of reasons. One of them is that, like I said, the Magic Online Vintage Cube is kind of like the most popular, most common, most well-known cube. And so if you hear cube and that's what you picture in your head, then you probably have these associations that, oh yeah, it's about storming off or about casting Emrakul or whatever that cube is about doing. The other thing is that, you know, because all of Magic outside of cube and to a degree as well Commander is about optimizing for power level, right? If you look at Standard, Modern, Legacy, Retail, Limited, Draft, it's just about how can you,
I mean, it's a game, players are trying to win,
it's a game, players are trying to win. And so and because of that, mm-hmm. like there's just so much of a grain in the Magic world towards like always trying to make things better and win. So many cube designers, myself included, I built the first cube in our play group back in the day, and I built it like a big deck. And so I was like, well, obviously I want to make this cube better and better. I just want to cut the bad cards, put more good cards in, because that was the heuristic I knew from all the decks I'd ever tuned and all the Magic I'd ever watched and consumed. And so it just kind of trended more and more powerful. So for all these reasons, people have this conception that cube has to be about that. And of course, it doesn't. It can be about whatever you want. Anthony in particular is a real champion, I think, of demonstrating how you can design so many different kinds of environments with cards that otherwise have really no home. It was a really great comment last night in a draft. We were drafting Anthony's cube, and one of our players in the playgroup looked at his pack and said, you buy these cards? Because, you know, these like weird, like, you know, draft chaff uncommons that you forget what they do. But Anthony's got, you know, foil copies of them or whatever. And it's like, yeah, well, I mean, he found a great home for these cards and crafted a game experience with them that really makes them shine. And you could do that in Cube. Like, you can't really do anywhere else. I mean, I guess you can do it in Commander if you have a really robust Rule Zero conversations. And you're like, this is my draft chaff Commander deck. It wins on turn 35 and is all about putting different kinds of counters on creatures or whatever. But Cube is really a place where you can essentially, like, bring everyone to that same playing field, right? Like, here's the environment. Everyone's going to approach it with their own perspective. They're all going to be trying to win, but you get to kind of set the power level wherever you want it to be. And that's a big sort of goal of ours, is to break this misconception that Cube has to be about playing Black Lotus, playing Sneak Attack, playing Recurring Nightmare, whatever your, like, you know, go-to iconic powerful Cube cards are.
Yeah, I mean, this is just so ingrained in the way that we talk about cards that it seems so natural for you to say, like, here's my Cube, here's a new card that came out that's more powerful. Like, you'll just say, this is a better version of this other card, so I should, you know, quote-unquote, upgrade it. But a Cube is a closed system. Like, adding one more powerful version of a card doesn't make it...
What you did is make every other card in your Cube a little bit worse.
Exactly, yeah.
Because you put a powerful card in. Now, everything else is a little bit worse.
Or to just take it from a different perspective, your opponent's going to have that card as often as you will. So it's not like you're increasing your win percentage. So I really love to think of Cube as this space where here's a cool rare you opened that just it is cool, it has cool gameplay, but doesn't have a home anywhere else. Put it in your Cube.
And my main Cube that I still have, which is a Cube I've had for the longest, is a very powerful Cube. It plays a lot of the iconic cards you might recognize from cards like the Magic Online Vintage Cube. It plays Snapcaster Mage. It plays Lightning Bolt. It plays, you know, very powerful cards. But importantly, I have cut so many cards and skipped over so many cards that are definitely good enough for that Cube that would be among the most powerful cards in the Cube that I feel are just not contributing to the kinds of gameplay I want to encourage. And so I am kind of optimizing for power, but within this range of the kinds of experiences I want to curate. And really, that just comes from the fact that, like, I want to play with Snapcaster Mage. I want to play with Dark Confidant. I want to play with Uro. Mm-hmm. I know that one's a little bit groan-inducing.
Yeah, I don't like that.
And if I want to cast these cards, if I want to cast these cards in my environment and I don't want them to be head and shoulders above everything else, then there is a certain bar that a card has to clear before it can really be considered in a Cube like that.
And isn't it an interesting parallel? We're talking about more powerful cards, and when you started listing them, they did tend to sound like more expensive cards at the same time as well. But you, like you said, you could do a draft cube, you could do the vintage cube with all of the mocks in it or anything. And so it's another common misconception that cube's always going to be expensive because people are constantly looking at this vintage cube.
Right. Yeah, if you look at the price tag of the Magic Online Vintage Cube, then you're like, well, I certainly can't play cube. I have to mortgage my whole house to buy a cube like that. But obviously it's not. You can play lesser powerful cards. You can play cheaper cards. You can play whatever you have. It's also, like, worth noting that, you know, Cube is an unsanctioned format. So if you want to write Jace the Mind Sculptor on an island, you can. And there's nobody that's going to come and arrest you for it as long as your playgroup's on the same page about that. So it's really open in terms of what you can actually do with the cards. And you don't absolutely do not have to be spending a bunch of money to play Cube. Frankly,
please write the full rules text of Jace the Mind Sculptor on that island, though. Don't make your opponents suffer.
frankly, the most expensive part about a Cube, I will be honest with you, is that you got to get a lot of sleeves. And that is expensive. And then your friends are going to come over with their grubby hands, and they're going to get all your sleeves dirty, and then you're going to want to replace them. That is honestly one of the most expensive parts of curating a cube.
Okay, before we continue, best snacks, though, for cube night. Speaking of getting the sleeves dirty, what do you normally serve on your cube nights to make sure that people aren't getting stuff all over those cards?
You have really opened Pandora's box
here. Oh, no.
Because both Anthony and I, especially Anthony, you know, we really love food and love cooking. So Anthony is renowned in our playgroup for the most lavish and delicious cube dinners. Just last night, we had homemade meatballs with homemade pasta. Anthony made the dough, rolled it out, cut it himself, made a nice meat sauce, these beautiful eggplants with a caper and lemon juice glaze. It was, you know, a beautiful meal that we had in between
cube
drafts.
I'm going to have you write the menu next time. That's a good description.
In between the two cube drafts we did when we had the meal, and nobody was allowed to go near the cube cards with spaghetti sauce all over their hands.
I just tried to overshoot. This time I made some very, very greasy focaccia, and so if you're eating that, you know you have to wash your hands after that. There's no in between of my hands.
Oh,
not
right.
That dirty.
I forgot the two beautiful loaves of focaccia. Oof, so
those
good.
Came out pretty well.
So do you set out pretzels or anything, or it's you cube and then you snack or eat, and then you cube again. How does that work? I'm just so listeners are planning.
It's good to try and keep them separate. Yeah, you know, I think we learned this because I'm not gonna lie. Getting eight people in a room is difficult. I'm on a mission to make Cube more accessible, but I'm not going to tell you that it's like super easy to get exactly eight people in one room to play Magic. I will say that one of the big things I learned early on to make it happen was I ran Cube brunches for a long time before the pandemic, and the deal was brunch started at 10, and so I was going to feed all my friends brunch. They'd be out the night before drinking, and they would just wake up and just literally want a bunch of pancakes or whatever. So I would have brunch ready at 10, games began at 11, and inevitably people would straggle in real late, right? They would straggle in at 10:45 or something. They were 45 minutes late to the event, but they just cut into their own brunch time, not the start time of the draft. So I highly recommend feeding people if you want to get them in, but I do like to keep the food and the Magic a little bit separate.
Food is the cheat code.
We keep them separate as well. When we host, we'll do like, you know, some meatballs. We'll do like a crock pot meatballs. We'll make, you know, bruschetta, but it's like, these are not really snack finger foods that should go around these cards. So interesting. Good thing to keep in mind. Now, another common misconception here, and we'd like you to expand on this, is that cubes are difficult to design. And if you do it badly, you won't have fun. Tell us about this.
This is a really complicated one because there is a high ceiling on how much you can throw yourself into a cube, how much work you can put into it. And I almost just see that more as a feature. Like, I'm designing cubes because that design experience is fun. On the other side, you can actually kind of just put together a pile of cards, and draft is self-correcting. It's not like it's going to be totally out of whack if you have a couple cards that are a little bit overpowered or underpowered. So I think you can take a low effort approach and still have a good time. You can also just take a list that someone already has. There's lots of cubes that have been heavily tested and iterated on. So there are resources if you just want to say, I want a cube, I want to just add it to my cart and buy the cube and sleeve it up and go, you can.
Yeah, if you look at the cube subreddit or some of these cube discords we're active in, you get a lot of people that are new to cube and they come with all these questions and they are so concerned about getting their cube right before they draft it. They just want the cube to be perfect. They don't want there to be any trap cards or any cards that are overpowered. And I'm always telling people, like, the number one piece of advice I give to new people is, like, just put it together and play. Like, if you're missing some cards, put some other cards in. Like, just start playing, because as Anthony said, draft is self-correcting. So even if your cube has a huge power range, that can be a feature of environment, right? Retail Limited has a huge power range. You can open a Mythic Rare that is just insanely overpowered and the best card of the entire set. And in that same pack, you're going to have some D-minus card that's like a 7-mana card meant for Commander if it does nothing in Retail Limited, or is like just some really below rate body or something. And those cards coexist in Retail Limited. People love Retail Limited though. So really, like, draft is such an amazing way to balance the playing field and say, well, whatever I did, now you get to try and do the best job you can within this environment. And it really makes things very self-correcting. And Magic is just fun. Like, drafting is fun. Opening up a pack of cards is fun, especially if it's a pack of cards that you like. These are cards that you enjoy and want to play with. It's going to be fun, and you're not going to have a bad time. You're not going to do it wrong. And I'm always just trying to encourage people to not get too hung up on, like, doing cube design right before they start playing.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a bigger misconception buried in what you're saying, which is that a lot of people think that cube is a thing you design once and is done, which in theory you could do that, but I've never seen it happen. Like, cube is an iterative process. You're going to grow it, you're going to change it, you're going to get feedback from your players, and that's just how it goes.
Yeah, we have good friends that have, you know, old border only cubes, so a cube that only uses old border Magic cards. And some of these people even don't even include, like, the new ones that have been added to the old border roster with the new old border printings. So their card pool has been unchanged for 20 years or whenever we got the modern border for the first time. And still, they're updating their cube every month, every couple weeks. They're, like, learning more about what they want, and they're changing their actual card pool to reflect their changing design goals. So it's an ever-evolving thing.
It's right. Interesting to see something in between that, and because I know Andy has a Ravnica cube, and so although it doesn't see updates every single set, it does see updates every time we return to that plane.
It does. So we see updates occasionally based on some feedback from everybody that's cubing. But, you know, talking about playing cards that you opened that you liked, when I actually built my cube, I designed it based on cards that only came from sets that took place on Ravnica. Mm-hmm. I did include War of the Spark, which appears to be pretty controversial for a Ravnica cube. But that gave me a full card pool of about 2017 cards. And the nice thing for me, at least, was that really the designers of Magic kind of did a lot of the work for me, right? Because the cards in those colors already kind of work together. So it is a something that I've seen people do with Innistrad as well, which is really just a plane-based cube or just a set-based cube. So, you know, Ravnica is based on two-color guild pairings for a heavily multicolored focus gameplay, which was nice. I was able to just pick out the cards that I liked from when I initially started playing Magic, and then I was able to just add a bunch from stuff from, you know, Ravnica's early days that I hadn't played, and then when we returned again to Ravnica just a few years ago. And Anthony, I saw you got to actually draft my cube, which is one of my favorite things about Cube Cobra, which is where at least I house my cubes. I wanted to know, what did you think when you were drafting it?
Ooh. So I thought it was great. I mean,
putting you on the spot.
You're definitely putting me on the spot, but that's what the podcast is for. I think you're totally right that, I mean, set cubes or theme cubes or plane cubes are super popular because they sort of let you recreate and capture your sort of like favorite draft experience. And you're totally right that by choosing a sort of more narrow focused aspect of the game, it makes the design process a lot easier and you get to leverage a lot of sort of what Wizards has already done.
And we should say there's a wide range of set cubes. Some people explicitly yes. try to like recreate the limited format, which is to say they include 3 of every common, 2 of every uncommon, 1 of every rare and mythic, and just make that the cube. And there's no design process. They're just actually literally taking the cards and trying to make it somewhat reminiscent of the actual right. retail limited format. There's cubes like yours, Andy, where you're like, all right, here's a plane. I'm going to restrict myself to cards that are just from this plane, so they're in specific sets. I'm going to take advantage of some of the, you know, common mechanics and themes that show up when they return to this plane. And then on the other side, there's people that have a player cube that is not actually based on just cards from that plane, but cards that feel like they kind of belong in that plane, right? So we see like horror-themed cubes, which have a lot of cards from Innistrad sets, but not always cards from Innistrad sets. Some other cards feel very Innistrad-y, even if they're not technically from Innistrad. And so we have a very sort of broad interpretation of what a set cube can be.
Yeah. So I think this cube's awesome. I think it's super flavorful. I love seeing all these Ravnica cards together. I look forward to one day hopefully drafting it with people and actually playing some real games. Something I did notice is that there is a really big difference in the power level of these cards. There's some cards that yes. are just really stand out and I'm excited to play them. What that does mean is that if I'm taking off my designer hat and putting on my player hat and trying to really spike the format, I'm going to take Signets over anything else and try and play a lot of those really high powered 4 and 5 drops.
Yeah, we found a lot of 3 and 4 color decks shine, and we have certainly had to tune this down quite a bit. Blue-white was being drafted heavily. We couldn't allow Teferi Time Raveler to remain in the cube. No one had fun playing against
that's gonna
it.
Be
notoriously
that's
fun
be
card, Teferi Time Raveler. Everyone loves it.
Very, very fun. But we had a chance to draft a few of your cubes, and we wanted to mention at least a few of them on the episode today. Andy, you've got a combat trick mini cube, and you've got a cube called Bun Magic Cube that you play with local play groups, with friends online and one-on-one. And then Anthony, you've got a turbo cube where everyone has an emblem that says spells and activated abilities cost 2 less. And then also the one that I really, really enjoyed drafting of yours was your regular cube, which aims at creating an experience to show off everything great about limited Magic. And I got to draft Noi and Dar in those. Ooh. Tell us, Andy, we'll start with your decks. Tell us about your combat trick mini cube. If you had to give us like an elevator pitch, right, real quick, what they are. And we're going to be sharing links to all of your cubes and your actual Cube Cobra accounts. But tell us about your two cubes, and then Anthony, we'll have you do the same.
Sure. The Bud Magic Cube is like my main cube. That's the one I've referenced a couple times already. That was the first cube I had, the one I spend the most time curating and lovingly catering through all various new Magic sets when they come out. The Combat Trick Mini Cube is actually, it's got a funny story behind it, which is that Anthony is an enjoyer of combat tricks. And
I like playing creatures. I like getting into combat, and I like having a plan when my opponent blocks.
And I historically find combat tricks to be a bit of a frustrating design space where I feel
he likes to block.
I like to block. and I oftentimes I have a lot of like, you know, very game designer-y complaints about them, where I feel like they invalidate some of my decision space, and you know, they have this really awful floor where if you have no creatures to target with them, they do nothing, and so it's a total dead card in your hand. And so the combat trick mini cube was just really me trying to explore this card type that I historically have not enjoyed, and trying to create a space for them to really thrive in the way that I wanted them to thrive. So a couple things about this cube. It is, I say mini cube, and this is actually maybe a little bit kind of counterintuitive. When I like refer to the size of the cube, so I have a mini combat trick cube, I have a degenerate micro cube, which is even smaller. I'm not actually talking about the size of the cube in terms of the number of cards in the cube. I'm talking about me modifying the deck size. And the reason I play with the deck size is because it allows me to control the consistency of decks. So in the combat trick cube, I really wanted very highly synergistic decks where you could build around specific cards and reliably find them. And in 40 card singleton, it's just too hard to count on getting a specific card or subset of cards. If you build your whole deck around it and you just never draw Jeskai Ascendancy or whatever, then your whole deck kind of falls apart. And so for that environment, I decided to pursue really deep synergies related to combat tricks, heroic style, targeting your creatures matter, power matters, some plus one counter stuff, which overlaps with all those things. A bunch of overlapping themes that are all kind of in the same space that are all very synergistic with this smaller deck size. So that cube, I have a 24 card minimum deck size instead of a 40 card minimum deck size, which means you get to see a lot more of your deck percentage-wise in your opening hand, and just build a more consistent game plan. The you have to make a small edit here because I've totally totally spaced on what I was going to say.
No. The next one's the
mark it
the
off
bun
on
magic
the cube. Mark it off on the timestamps. So here's what I was saying. The other thing about this cube is that I had to be very conscious about the kinds of interaction and removal I ran, given that I was trying to make combat tricks be like the thing to do. And this is a great example of intentionally not playing a bunch of powerful cards that would otherwise be very good in the cube. You know, if we were building the cube like a deck, you would say, well, obviously put a bunch of really good removal in here because that blanks all the combat tricks. But I'm explicitly trying to make the combat tricks worth building around and worth focusing your entire deck on. And so to that end, I included a very limited suite of instant speed removal, and only kinds of removal that I felt like were interactive with combat tricks. So I really like disfigure style removal that cares about the toughness of your target, because those can often be answered by another combat trick to pump the toughness even higher, and you get this kind of interesting counterplay that's almost like, you know, a counterspell war in like Legacy, but it's a disfigure giant growth war in the combat trick mini cube.
Yeah, it's wild. Now, Anthony, tell us about your turbo cube and then your regular cube.
So I would go in the other order. I would just say that the regular cube is really my baby. This is the cube that I've worked on the most and had, you know, in paper, played the most games with the longest. And it's really just about capturing the kind of gameplay that I really most enjoy, which is a lot of creatures, and we got some combat tricks, and especially focusing on cards that read cleanly and simply, but have as much complexity as possible in terms of the way that the cards interact. So you have a lot of potential for interesting novel gameplay. And it's also based around like a lot of cubes will be based on sort of guild archetypes, where it's like, oh, blue-white's doing this and green-red's doing this. And there's a little bit of that, but it's more just really tiny little packages of different synergies. So you're not just going to say, oh, I'm drafting the blue-white deck. It's all about the blue-white theme. It's going to have a little bit of an artifact theme and a little bit of a spells matter, and how you find cards that bridge and overlap those is a really interesting and fun challenge for me. So that's my main cube, and I love it. The turbo cube, on the other hand,
I love the turbo
started
cube.
A little bit as a joke, where it was actually inspired by an arena format where they said, okay, well, you can do this draft of, I think it was like Coria, and all spells cost 5 less. And I said, we could make a cube about that. And it turned out to be a lot more fun than I really expected it to be. You just get to take a ton of... So it's really leaned into all of the really broken cards. So everything costs 2 less, including activated abilities, which include cycling. It includes a lot of activated abilities on dinky little artifacts like Guild Globe, a card you
have you
do
ever
not
played
remember.
A cube where Guild Globe is the
Guild
best
Globe
card
is the
in the
best
cube
card,
by
it's
far.
Insane.
Never pass Guild Globe.
Yeah, I mean, so yeah, it's an environment where you're like, oh, here's Oko and here's Bag of Holding. Actually, I should probably take Bag of Holding because Oko costs 2 mana, which is insane.
Yeah, Oko not that great here.
So yeah, we did end up building the Turbo Cube in paper, and we bust it out every once in a while as a treat. It's not the kind of Magic that I want to play every day, but for an occasional thing, it's a lot of fun.
I got to say, too, it's we've talked a lot about this particular cube on our show because you've started it because you have a bit of a... Anthony's, you know... He likes.
I have a grudge.
He likes lower powered cards, and I think he's rightfully frustrated when people only want to talk about the most powerful cards.
People
for Cube.
Should talk about the powerful cards. People enjoy them.
But,
they're
but
good.
Only is the thing.
But we should also talk about all these other
but
cards.
You also want to talk about Puppet Conjurer or whatever oh card you're God. Into these
I,
days.
I miss Puppet Conjurer.
Anyway, so Anthony was like, everyone's only ever talking about powerful cards. He's like, you know, screw it. I'll just make all the cards powerful. Then now what?
Yeah,
now,
you think Moxen are cool? How about Prophetic Prism when it costs two less?
So he made this kind of cube, almost like a, you know, like a weird experiment of like, well, let's just make all the cards powerful then and see if people like it. And it turned out people do actually really like it. And I think we learned a lot about, at least I learned a lot from watching you design the Turbo Cube and then playing it a bunch of times about the kinds of things in Magic that are fun that you might not always expect to be fun. Like, just doing a bunch of stuff
doing
is
a lot
fun.
Of things.
Like taking a bunch of game actions is fun. If you get to do nine things on
drawing
your turn,
an opening hand and saying, "I don't know what I'm going to do this game, but I know it starts with cycling four cards for free and seeing what happens next."
You know, and it, all those things might have been trivial or inconsequential, like just free cycling and then doing nothing. But like taking actions is actually kind of fun. And the other thing I think we learned about that cube is that because people playing cubes are already have a context of Magic, they know what Magic is. They don't approach the experience as a total blank canvas. And so even though everybody's deck is equally broken in the Turbo Cube, so no one's deck is broken, right? Again, right. It's all relative. You know, it's not like this is a more powerful environment because everyone's, you're still going to have a 3-0, you're still going to have an 0-3, right? Your deck's going to go 0-3 even though you took 55 game actions on turn one. But because people come with this perceptions about what Magic is, getting to like taste that power, getting to take all those game actions and have all this stuff be free is kind of fundamentally fun for a Magic player because it's like, oh, it's like, you know, going to a track day and getting to drive a really fast car that you wouldn't otherwise get to drive because you're doing this thing that Magic doesn't normally let you do.
I also just love it as an experiment in pushing the limits of Magic's rule system. I think that's honestly one of the coolest things about Magic is how robust it is. And I mean, you can't play Monopoly and say, we're just going to change a rule and everything's going to be understandable and shake out and we'll know how to implement this change in the rules. But with Magic, we do have that. We can make all kinds of changes and actually then be able to concretely say like, oh yeah, this is what happens when someone has Thalia in play and then you want to cast your Wayfarer's Bauble when everything costs two less to cast. The rules work.
Yeah, because the Magic rule set is very robust. You know, they've obviously spent a long time tuning it, and so it does withstand some tinkering where other rule sets maybe have some empty space that would not.
So I don't know if the Turbo Cube is the... It's not what I think most people should do, but I do like having it as a flag to say, look how much space there is for what we can do with this game.
I know we have limited time. I want to talk about Mike's theoretical Commander Cube before this podcast ends, if that's right with everybody else.
Oh, that's absolutely fine. In fact, I was about to get there.
I'm sorry for robbing your transition. I didn't mean to steal your segue.
It's okay. I mean, I was going to talk about Anthony's Black Cube because it kind of... is how I originally started playing Commander.
Oh yeah, we have a Shire deck, so I bet you would like the Mono Black Cube.
As a fellow Mono Black Commander player, I empathize with that. The Black Cube is interesting. It was also an experiment basically to say, how important is color? Can we still create diverse gameplay and an interesting dynamic draft if we remove color from Magic? Which you could do just by saying, like, again, we can do custom rules. You can just say everybody's lands tap for all colors, and that's one way to do it. I decided also just to access a different sort of card pool and different restrictions and not add custom rules, just to build a cube that only has black cards and artifacts. And the answer is, I think it does work, but it is not. It's fun to have all five colors. So.
I found it very difficult to actually draft in a particular draft style, like either zombies
right.
or
signals
something.
Are very different. But you can cast every card in the pack. Yeah.
It's also difficult because if you're drafting on CubeCober, has this great feature where you can sort of simulate drafts, but it's trained against cubes that are not like this. So the bots don't know how to say like, oh, I'm just going to draft this zombie tribal.
Actually, Geralt's Messenger is broken because all my lands, I always have triple black, and so this card is just really, really strong.
But I just like the way that I drafted it is how I would build a Commander deck, and it's just, I like Grey Merchant of Asphodel. I have no idea if it's going to work out with the rest of my deck, but I Grey Merchant.
And it's got Devotion to the Cube on it, so it's probably pretty good.
So sure, let's talk about the Commander Cube that I've been trying to develop over the past, I don't know, when did Commander Legends come out? Is it 2 years now? How old are we?
I don't
know. I'm pretty sure that was about 2 weeks ago.
Actually, I do have a rule. We can't talk about time. That's a personal boundary for me. No speaking about time, please.
So I really got interested. Obviously, my first introduction to Cube was actually Andy's Ravnica Cube. I'm not really sure if I've actually had an opportunity to Cube much past that, but the draft format that Commander Legends brought got me very interested in Commander Cube. And I know that I have seen a Commander Cube played on game nights one time before as well. And it just really spoke to me. And when I approached it, I think I might be biting off a lot more than I can chew, especially coming from a constructed commander player, because I instantly went, I don't want two color combinations. I want three color combinations, and I want to be able to play all 10, and I want all 10 to be extremely unique. And I know that's not something that you really want to do with a cube format. You can have some unique cards, but then you have to have some cards that are just going to work for more than one strategy. So I shared a little document with you, just the very small amount of information that I've developed so far in looking at the different styles of the three color combinations that I want to do. From your perspective, this amount of data, or what I've started with, is this where you want to start when it comes to a cube creation? And then how different is a commander cube creation from a normal cube creation?
That's a really good question, as it's a deep, deep topic. I think that you're right that there is this challenge where one of the things that's great about Commander is you can build these really focused synergistic decks. You can say, I'm interested in Spellslinger or, Equipments Matter, and just build a deck that is extremely focused around that.
But one of my favorite things about Commander is you get to make otherwise totally janky cards really
absolutely
good.
Yeah.
That is one of the most, when I was building decks a bunch, it was like, that was what always brought me the most joy. It's like, here's a random card that I really like. Let me do something totally novel with it and make this card the star of my deck, which you can do in Commander, which you really can't do anywhere else.
But if we try and sort of transport that to a drafted environment, it does become challenging, because if you're putting in all these very narrow focused cards that, only make sense in that one deck, you kind of end up in the situation where it's like, oh, we're just kind of unshuffling the cube. And, you can get into sticky situations if two people are trying to unshuffle the equipment deck, and so their decks don't really come together. So, yeah, I think that in most drafted environments, you do want cards that are much more, still not, it's not like you want every card to work for every player in every context, but you do want cards to fit together in different ways so that every time you draft a deck, you're drafting something novel and is a new combination of different effects. So I think that there's a lot of design space to explore, but there do need to be different expectations about, you're not going to just be able to put shuffle five commander decks together and call it a cube. I mean, you can, of course. You can
do
whatever
you
want.
You can, and I bet it would be more fun than you would expect. I bet you'd be like, oh, actually, this card that's in my green-white equipment deck, it goes great in this other commander deck I didn't even think about, and now I have this cool cross synergy. Here's what I'll say, Mike. I think you're approaching this in a very common way. This is how so many people design a cube, right? They sit down and they say, how big is my cube? What are my themes? And kind of lay out this template for themselves that they then plan to go fill in with individual cards. And that's a perfectly valid way to do it. I think it's one of the harder ways to do it, frankly, to get to an actual place where you're happy with it. And what I would advise alternatively,
it sets up very concrete expectations for yourself too. And so when you see oh, well, this theme, I wanted this Enchantments Matter theme to work and it doesn't really come together, that can be sort of disappointing.
Or it narrows when you're looking at the card pool, the cards that jump out at you. You might say, oh, that card's really interesting to me, but it doesn't fit my themes I laid out, so I'm just going to pass it over. I think the most fun, rewarding, and efficient way to design a cube you're happy with is much simpler, and it's just to say, what are the cards you want to play? When you say you want a commander cube, you're imagining some kind of gameplay that brings joy to you. You mentioned the Brandon Sanderson episode of Game Nights where they drafted his commander cube. You mentioned Commander Legends. The things about those that were enticing to you that you like, that's what you should start with. What are the things you're trying to create? What are the cards you want to be good? What are the cards you want people to cast to put in their deck? And work backwards from there. My favorite cube design process is really a discovery one. It's the Combat Trick Mini Cube is a great example, actually, because I just started with combat tricks. I was like, I'm going to put combat tricks in this cube. Let's go get 40 combat tricks that I like for whatever reason, put them in a pile and say, here's where I'm going to start. Then we're going to say, all right, if I'm going to have these cards in the cube and I want these cards to be good, what other cards would make these cards good, right? What other cards fit with the cards I've already selected? And that's how I arrived at some of the more obvious themes like Heroic, where it's like, all right, yeah, obviously Heroic's good with combat tricks. Power matters stuff, like a creature that cares about its power number actually having some other impact in the game. That's pretty obvious with combat tricks. then you kind of go a little bit removed and you're like, all right, well, combat tricks are all instants and sorceries, at least in the cube that I was building. So maybe some stuff that is spell slinger themes. Maybe I can get stuff that triggers when you cast instants and sorceries. And that's like a layer removed from that. And you keep following this kind of exploratory look at what you've got and say, what does this want? What is good here? And then you add a couple more cards. You go to the next theme and you keep going until you've kind of built something out that you're happy with. And the end result might not be 480 cards like you've laid out. It might not have as discrete, obvious themes as you're describing here. It might not even be color balance. You might have way more blue cards or way more green cards, which is also totally fine. Your cube does not have to be evenly color distributed. That's another more minor misconception, but it is a misconception about cube that you have to like perfectly balance everything. But the result will be like a bunch of cards that have unique interactions with each other that I think will end up drafting pretty nicely.
Okay. And then I do think it may be a little bit deceiving because in my mindset, when I came up with these themes for all these three color combinations, I had particular legendary creatures in mind. And when it comes to commander draft, you do need to make sure that you can draft a legendary creature or planeswalker or make up some sort of rule. I know, Andy, you've played with another commander deck where all of the monocolored commanders counted as having partner to kind of make colors more accessible. But when I'm looking at my Esper enchantments theme deck in my head, I'm going, okay, I'm building for Xur the Enchanter specifically. And that's also kind of why I have this extra note on here. I know with Brandon Sanderson's Commander Cube, he had some extra cards in there that weren't actual magic cards that would add colors or reduce mana cost of some things. And I was thinking about doing a point buy system after a draft, and maybe some of the cards you can draft gives you more points into your point pool, kind of like an auction at the end of it to try to buy the legendary creature that you want. But it maybe that would railroad things a little bit too much.
Yeah, I mean, that's
thinking about it here.
A real challenge with this idea of like, hey, we love Commander. Commander's a great format. We love drafting. Let's mash them together. I would actually make a proposal to you, which is that I don't think Commander, the actual having a thing in the command zone, makes sense in a drafted environment. I feel like it really narrows the way that you're drafting to say like, oh, now I'm in these color pairs. I can only take these cards in these colors, which I feel like we already have a solution to that. Like again, I love the rule set of Magic and the mana system that you have this tension between, do I want to play more cards, more colors to get access to more cards, or play fewer colors to have more consistent mana base. Like that is already really interesting tension.
And funnily, it's actually kind of an opposite of the tension in commander design where you want your commanders to be more colors because it just gives you more cards. So we see 4 and 5 color commanders, especially these like Golos style commanders where the actual commander is really easy to cast. Maybe it's 0 colors or 1 colors, but then it has an activated ability, which just secretly says now you can put whatever cards you want in your deck. The actual design of these legendary creatures is designed for a very specific context, which is not normally drafting. Commander Legends being the exception to that, obviously.
Right. And I'm actually really not a fan of I'm just going to say it. Not a fan of Brandon Sanderson's sort of regalia mechanic, because I feel like as a designer, I always want to solve problems by simplifying things if we can. And this idea of let's make it more complex and say we have this extra rule on top of the commander rules that now you can add extra colors to your deck. And then everyone kind of ended up just playing 4-color decks anyway. Why don't we just simplify rules and take away that color identity rule, which it makes sense in Commander because it forces you to play unique decks and not just add the same, you know, 5-color good stuff every single time you're building a new deck. But in a draft, we already have so many mechanics that are forcing you to do novel things and create novel decks. So I would definitely advocate that if you want to build a cube that sort of captures the essence of what you love about Commander, you know, make it a multiplayer cube. Multiplayer is the huge feature that defines how Commander gameplay plays out. Include the cards that you love to play in Commander. But if we can simplify it and not add more complexity, that's always where I'm going
to
err.
I guess another way to put it, and we have a whole episode or two about this entire topic if you want to hear more about our take on Commander cubes and Commander Legends and how it affects the cube landscape. Really, it's like, it's a simple but difficult to answer question, which is like, what is it about Commander that you enjoy?
Right.
Like, get to the essence of what it is you're trying to capture, because Commander is a brilliant format. It is so brilliantly designed. The fact that it's singleton, the fact that it's 100 card decks or 99 card decks, the fact that you have this card in the command zone.
Yeah, you have this hook that really gives your deck identity and structure and a way to talk about the deck.
It's
really powerful.
It's a perfect way to navigate the challenge of we're trying to make a social format where decks can be diverse, but not like so crazy different power levels. Like you have the diversity of 99 card singleton, which means that in a lot of games, you're just never going to see cards, right? You just don't ever see them. So you can't build your entire deck around any specific card in the 99 because you're just not going to get it most of the time. And in order to like provide a countervailing force to that, Commander as a format adds the Commander, where it's like, here's a card you can literally build around. But then, because if you get any single card you can build around, then there's obviously a whole bunch of broken cards. In order to limit that, they were like, well, let's just limit it to legendary creatures. It also has some flavorful thing. That now this like primary, this like, you know, a proper noun character is the leader of your deck, right? That has a flavorful thing. It also has a game mechanic impact of limiting the cards you can actually put in your deck and makes our ban list easier. We don't have to ban all these broken cards you can just have in the command zone. And then adding color identity as a way to like further limit what decks can do, which increases deck diversity. All these decisions are brilliant, brilliant decisions for constructed Commander. And a lot of them just don't translate to draft. It's like, now the draft is like really sabotaged, or draft is already solving a lot of those problems in parallel ways.
There are other ways, you know, you can say, oh, I have this commander that cares about turning my lands into creatures. So now I can play Darksteel Citadel, and that's a really potent card here. In a draft, you're already forcing people to play with a certain subset of cards, and you actually have even more freedom as the designer of the environment to choose what cards you're including. So this idea of having a commander to force you to activate cards just is almost redundant.
All this is to say that, like, we love Commander, we love Cube, we love the merging of both of them. I think that it's actually more simple than I think a lot of people think to just make the experience fun and make it what you want it to be. And you don't have to get kind of lost in this rules text of, like, how do I actually, like, change the thing that I love to fit with this other thing that I love? It might just be a different thing or a parallel thing that isn't exactly the same.
I mean, I should say, because I'm being a little bit critical of this idea of Commander Cube, that if you have a Commander Cube and you're enjoying it, you're doing it right. Like, the point is to have fun. If you enjoy your Commander
Cube, Brandon Sanderson is doing great.
Do it. Have a good time with it. But if I'm putting on my designer hat, I'm definitely thinking about these problems and thinking about what does the actual Commander and the Commander rule set do for Magic? How does it let you play Magic in a certain way and let you enjoy a huge variety of cards? And how does that relate to Cube? What are the actual mechanics that are allowing us to have those exciting experiences?
Awesome. So, Mike, I'm excited to see where you get with this cube in the upcoming months. And thank you guys so much for your thoughts on that. And Andy and Anthony, thank you so much for joining us on our show this week to talk about Cube. This has been a lot of fun. Can you tell everybody where they can find you online, your content, and then let us know if we should check out something specifically right off the bat, maybe a good starting off point for our listeners to check out your Cube content.
You can find everything we do at luckypaper.co. Everything is linked there, so I won't bother listing all the stuff individually. We have a podcast every week called Lucky Paper Radio, where we talk about Cube, but really we talk about Magic, and Cube is just our way to talk about Magic because we have total control over it. We don't have to get distracted by bans and stuff. And, you know, I think one of the reasons that we felt like you were kindred spirits in the Magic content world is that we really talk about the parts of Magic that we like. There's so much Magic content which is just complaining about this, saying this is broken, getting mad about some ban. And it's like, that's not productive. It's not what we want to do. We don't want to spend our time complaining. So we try to have a very positive vibe on the show and just talk about the parts of Magic that we really love. So you can find that podcast anywhere you find podcasts and everything at luckypaper.co. In terms of starting points, I think for listeners that for this last bit of conversation where we kind of went off on a little tangent here about Mike's Commander Cube. If that is interesting to you, we do have an entire episode about Commander Cube. I will send the link to you all so that you can put the exact link in your show notes. We also have an episode just about what is Cube and how to start designing one, which I think is a great starting place for anybody that thinks Cube is an interesting thing and might want to pursue it on their own.
Wonderful. Well, everybody, as always, if you want to find me online, you can find me on Twitter at Andy Florian.
And you can find me on Twitter at Wormcoil Engine. Want to give a special thanks to Ryan Nichols, our producer and editor. Thank you so much for everything that you do.
Thank you, Ryan.
And Chris Wolf. Yes. And for Chris Wolf, who handles all of our graphic design. You can check out all of his thumbnails on our YouTube channel for our Commander gameplay. Thank you for everything that you do. And to all the rest of you listeners out there, we will talk to you next week.
Bye, everyone.